Hello, this is the Smiling Conscious Traveler podcast. I'm Ottmar Brauniker from Austria, and my guest today is Martin Glanert from Germany. Hello, Martin.
Welcome.
Martin is a psychologist and entrepreneur. He became known in 2010 with his program Netpreneurs. Together with his wife and his two children, he lives in India and the Black Forest. That will lead me very soon to the first question. Martin has specialized in the implementation of scalable business models in the field of e-learning. As a founder of WLWP, he is also significantly involved in the development of e-learning platform spreadmind.de. Since 2016, he has been intensively involved in the topic habits. Among other things, he has created a 30-day program for rapid learning of habits, which is based on scientifically proven studies. So, welcome, Martin, to my show. Thank you that you joined me today.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here.
There's a lot of different angles I would start, but let me start with a quote from your Xing profile. It's a German business network like LinkedIn. You said, "You're not hearing what you want to hear from me. Together, we prioritize energy and presence in your everyday life. Better business, better partnership, and better family life." And you told me that you are a psychologist who turned into an entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. So how did you get the idea to start to study actually psychology?
I was very undecided. I didn't know what to study. So I thought, what would be the most broad study I could do that would leave me open to a lot of possibilities? And I came out in psychology because, to me, how the human mind works, that is something that is applicable in pretty much every field, right? Mm-hmm. Even today, if you look at technology, you know, there's still a human using the technology, right? So even there's psychology involved.
It's a very interesting aspect, because I'm actually a software engineer and I'm also designing interfaces for especially web applications. And yeah, you should always have the human in mind who is actually interacting with these interfaces. Even in this digital world, there are still humans who are interacting with this technology.
Yeah, sometimes if I introduce myself, I introduce myself as an architect for social interaction systems.
Social interaction systems.
Yeah, this is like one layer even above the design, right? This is more about the general interaction, but one part of the interaction obviously is the design where people click.
That is a really interesting, interesting word, social interaction systems. I just try to grasp the idea what is behind this. Could you explain a little bit this, what you mean by that?
Yes, for example, working with a meditation app, we designed a feature where you can get points and you can have teams of three. And you, and all the teams of three, they compete every week, right? Mm-hmm. Who meditated the most minutes, right? That's pretty basic setup. The app is also an alpha. And then, but you only get your points every day if all three people in your team have meditated that day. Mm-hmm. If not, your minutes are lost, okay. Right? So in this way, having set up the rules of the game in this way, it helps for people to give support to each other in a close group to do a daily meditation, even if it's just 1 minute, right? It's just 1 minute is required for the whole group to get the points that day. But if you don't do it, right, everyone loses. So you have that very, because in motivation, you always need to strive for a balance in competition and support, right? Mm. And for example, this is a social interaction system that we created for the goal of helping people to meditate daily.
I liked that idea. I mean, I had a similar experience when I started this podcast course, Broadcast Yourself, with London Rural Academy. We had this accountability sheet and something also like, they called it Olympic Games or something like this, that if one of the team didn't participate well, then the whole team lost. And that is a similar idea. So to push each other to do something, what you want to achieve.
Yeah. Yeah. And that is nice, but you know, that can also lead, like you need to watch that interaction very closely, right?
Yes, yes.
Because it can also lead to shaming and, you know,
and it's people, also
people kicking other people out of their team or something like this, right? Mm. So whenever you include competition, you need to be very careful, you know, how you design it.
Yeah, yeah. Because at a certain point, I had also this feeling when there's a lot of things going on in life and you can't keep the pace with the group, then you get sometimes frustrated and I am the one who is holding the rest of the group back. That can get also a frustrating experience sometimes.
Yeah.
That's how I felt. Yeah, there's something else, because I said it in the introduction. First of all, I figured out that you wanted already to become an entrepreneur while you were studying psychology. And I read also about the company, or was it a program? No, program. Netpreneurs. Mm-hmm. What was this all about?
I started Netrepreneurs when I moved back to Germany after I finished my studies, because I wanted to find out how can you live a life, you know, not following the normal way of life where you get a job, you progress and everything. I found out at university that I had some offers to do my PhD. There, three people wanted me to have my doctoral degree with them, but everything was too slow for me at university, right? So I felt, okay, I need to get into business. My motivation span is for shorter projects, not for like really long empirical studies. They get me bored. So I founded my first company in 2008 when I was still a student. And then when I moved back 2010, I kind of had to decide, okay, do you want to get a job or not? So I decided not to get a job, but I didn't know, well, what do you do? My parents, they're both teachers. I don't come from a business background. I didn't have a lot of business relationships. So I thought, okay, let's just talk to some people who are successful in my eyes. And then later it turned out not all of them were, but that's a different story. I kind of adopted that neuro-linguistic programming approach of modeling. So basically, I thought to myself, well, those people, there must be something special about the way they think, feel, and act in order for them to produce results. So if I can find out how they think, feel, and act, and why they do, and how they react to different situations, I can copy that. I can put that into practice in my own life, and I will also be successful. So this is where I started this podcast. And today, I think 75 interviews have been done.
Yeah.
And
cool. Over which period of time?
Yeah. So it's almost 10 years. So
okay.
I start.
From time to time, not regularly. Or
yeah. Well, I started off doing it every week or something, and then later every month. And then when my kids were born, I stopped for about 3 years, I think. And then now I've been picking it back. I'm really in that kind of situation right now where I'm looking for new challenges, and where I also, with the whole Corona thing, where I want to connect to more people and invite them into my life. So I went back to interviewing people, and well, that's been working very great for me.
That is actually something what I love now with my newly started podcasting journey, that I connect so much with people, and I find things out about these people who are around me, what I've never known if I wouldn't have connected with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think to me that is the biggest benefit of it. It is not the content piece produced. It is the relationship foundation that you get from having a good talk with somebody.
I mean, after all, I might tell how we met actually. I was in the course Broadcast Yourself together with your wife, Barati Corinna Glanat. And she has also her own podcast now, and she made an interview with you, with her husband. And that interview, I really enjoyed it so much, this openness, this honesty between you and your wife. And I really connected with your story. And then I said, let me have an interview with Martin too. And let me, let's see if we can connect with each other. That is actually what I enjoy so much with podcasting.
Yeah.
That I hear people's stories. And I think, as you said, it is very beneficial for everyone who is listening also to the podcasts. As I had a benefit from the interview with you and your wife, I hope that people will have benefit from these interviews too, what I'm doing. So there is one thing, might jump around a little bit, but this really struck me when I read in the description that you're living in India and in Schwarzwald, which is Black Forest in Germany. How can you live at the same time at two places?
You can't.
But it sounds like this a little bit. That's why I'm asking this question.
Yes. It is because we have a house rented there permanently.
Okay.
And we used to go there 3-4 times per year for longer periods. Then having the kids, we cut back to 2 times per year. But I mean, then it's not just 1 week, right? Then it's like 2 months or something. Let's see how much time we will spend there in the future. I might have to rework that part of my self description on the website, as well as I have to rework that part about we love WordPress, WLWP, because I wanted
to ask that too. What does it mean actually?
Yeah, it means we love WordPress, and it is WordPress hosting with some extras. Specialized in multi-site and big clients that need scalability for client projects. But I just sold my shares to my partner, so this is also why I'm more open to new endeavors right now, because I feel okay, this is come to pass. This was a very pretty technology based work I did there.
Yeah, I just wanted to explain to the viewer listener. I'm actually staying at home also with my kids here, and you might hear it in the background that they are playing. And yeah, I want to be honest about this too. It's sometimes a challenge to do a podcast with kids, especially with 3 and 5 year old kids. You have your children almost the same age, you told me.
Yes, but I like it. It sounds very natural. It just gives a human touch, right, to the podcast.
Yeah, I think it's quite common nowadays that people just, yeah, they say, I'm genuine, I'm honest, that is my life, that is my journey. And the kids are part of my life, obviously. So why I'm mentioning this is I'm 43 years old, and you said you are digital native, but I didn't grow up with the internet. It was about 20 years ago when I started to get into the internet thing. And for me, it was not such an easygoing thing to step in front of the camera, even though I'm working at the TV station, but it was not so natural for me, and to show all my life to the whole world. Mm-hmm. That is something what I had to learn first and to get comfortable with. Now I'm enjoying it. I'm doing my live videos every day, and I'm enjoying the interaction with people. But before, it was like, yeah. How does this feel for you? You're describing yourself as a digital native. What do you actually mean by that?
That is a very good question. Also, that has changed a lot in the last 10 years. Before, well, let me start with the start, right? That was the ESDN, right? The much beloved 64 kilobit, but very stable internet connection. I think I was about 14 or 15 years old. And I spent a lot of time, I think at the end it was 8 to 10 hours per day, playing Ultima Online, which was one of the first multiplayer online, like there was like a huge world. It was like way before World of Warcraft, right? But it was, there were like 10 or 20,000 player on one server, and it was playing that game. And I was enjoying myself. And then I went to New Zealand to live there for a year in a student exchange program. And I taught myself how to do HTML. And so I was in Notepad. I copied all the different web pages, things, you know, the hat and the body and whatever. And I used MS Paint to design a background. And so I had a little website where I posted photos. And about every second week, I wrote a kind of article I called Letter to Home. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, you would call that a blog, right? But in 2000, that term wasn't coined yet. And so I wrote a blog with photos and letters to my fellow students who didn't go up road, and kind of sharing with them what was happening to me and what I was learning. So I'm a digital native because I was very early on trying to see, you know, how I can use that interconnected technology for something real, for my real life. And now fast forward a lot of years, like 20 years to now. And now I think that the analog life really is the most beautiful gift in the world. And I am, being a digital native, I think how we can use technology to have people enjoy the real world more. Right? For example, working on another meditation app, we're designing a system where you can do specific meditations, but only if your GPS is registered in a certain area, right? And then only if, and then some of the advanced meditations, you can only access if like two or three people are registered at the same spot at the same time, right? Actually, it's not been built yet, but it's the idea of meditation app that uses digital reality to enhance analog reality. Mm. So my idea in this is that in the analog reality, it's the scarcity of resources that need to be overcome. In the digital reality, there is way too much resources, right? So it's a scarcity of focus that needs to be overcome. And I think one of the first companies that did that excellently was Twitter. Namely, to limit your message to 140 characters. And I try to think in the same way, okay, what can I do to limit the digital reality in order to enhance the analog reality? And for example, this could be that people need to be at a specific GPS coordinates to be able to play a meditation, or that people need to be together at a certain location in order to do something, for example, access a meditation. Or it could also mean that people need to scan a code, you know, like a QR code, like it's on one phone and two, three people need to scan it in order to activate something. And I love those ways where we can use digital technology to connect with the analog world, because I believe that only in the analog world is true happiness to be found. I think our body, our senses, our whole being is just made to be alive in nature, to have contact with people who are in the same room. And we can use digital technology to get ideas, to get inspiration, but we should not fully live in the digital life, because it will make us unhappy. But we can take some ideas. It can simplify life in many ways. But I think the best way to use a messenger is to write somebody, to meet in person, to go for a walk in the forest.
Definitely. Yeah. I'm doing it again, but I miss it a little bit because there's not so much interaction going on in my life. A lot of Zoom calls, but now last Thursday we were outside to meet a friend to teach the kids horseback riding, and it was such a nice change in the life to have real interaction again, and not only with meeting with the friend, but there was also this connection with these big animals, the horses. That is something what we humans actually need. We need this interaction with other beings.
Yeah, and I think you can also see the way technology develops, right? It is like, okay, we need better resolution, full HD, 4K, Well, I don't know what resolution our eyes is, but it is perfect. So technology is trying to move that way, right? And then we need better sound, you know, we need less latency. Well, we have all that in the analog world, so we can just use it to the best of our abilities. But the digital technology opens ways to, for example, communicate outside of time, outside of space, and it opens new possibilities that weren't there before. So in this way, it can enrich it, but for me, that's the cream on top. That's something to add as an extra when you have friends in your real world, you know, when you go outside in the nature, when you have people around you to have emotional connection and interaction to, then you can add something in the digital world as a surplus, but it cannot replace this in any way.
Yeah, it shouldn't be. Instead, it should be additional to the real life.
Yeah, and nowadays, apps are created in a way that they are targeting specific neurotransmitters, especially dopamine, serotonin, noradrenaline, which give the impression that you can have a little bit of happiness or joy by using the app. Namely, for example, Instagram is very good in doing this. But it is just the impression. I don't think that is something that can be sustained in the long run.
Yeah. I mean, I'm actually someone who loves playing computer games. But I realized it lately that it goes till a certain point till it gets boring, till I feel empty somehow, that I'm just left empty without any joy anymore playing it. In the beginning, it's like, I need to play it. I feel that, as you said, this dopamine, that I feel the excitement. But after a while, I realized there's something missing. And yeah, you just said it actually, what is missing.
Yeah. I think it's a little bit like junk food. If you're just looking for calories, it seems like
it's a good metaphor.
Fit for the purpose of eating, right?
Yeah.
But if you look more in detail in the macronutrients and everything, then you see there's so much missing. And if you do that often, or it replaces your normal way, then we will see in a few years, I think, what's happening. But the more I see how the digital world is developing, the more I make sure I go and work in the garden. I touch the soil with my bare hands. I walk barefoot. I walk in the rain. You know, I get out in the sunshine every single day.
Yeah, that's first of all, I love the metaphor you said. You compared it with junk food. And the second thing, I agree with you. It's really, there is nothing, no replacement. Just, as you said, walk barefoot on the soil, get in touch with the elements. That is really, really essential. That is, I think everyone feels like that is somehow you're recharging your batteries. You're recharging, getting the vital energy. So, yeah, I just remembered something what I mentioned at the beginning, what you wrote there on your Xing profile. Together we prioritize energy and presence in your everyday life. And especially this presence, I'm really focusing a lot on that lately. And I think it's a very important thing in life to be present. Like, I'm present now to you. I'm present here now. I look at you and I'm really interacting with you. So how does this fit into your life, to be present?
How does it fit in my life? So I mean, what do I do to be present?
Yeah, is it important for you in your life to be present?
Yes.
And how do you live it?
Yes. I mostly discovered this by doing things the other way. So by not being present and problems arising through this, I discovered the joy of being present. So I think one of the biggest thing is multitasking. So which means doing several things at a time. It just doesn't work. And also research has shown that it's a complete waste of mental energy. it's better to do one thing and then do the next thing. And I remember my host that when I was in New Zealand, and he told me, Martin, if a thing is worth doing, it's worth doing it well. And I often remember this because I think, is the thing I'm right now, is it something that is really worth doing now? Then it is worth having my full attention. And not just my mental attention, but also my emotional attention, my whole being. So this also means that I train myself to be present. And the way I have found this is by doing breath exercise, pranayama. This is one of the things that helped me to develop that presence. I feel that a lot of the meditations, how can I say, a lot of the meditations that don't involve the body, they don't work well for me. I need to have a strong somatic anchor for doing the meditations. So, for example, now also if I feel that I get distracted, that my thoughts fly away if I'm talking to somebody, I just try to have a really deep, calm breath. I try to focus on my breath.
I'm just doing it.
Being in the with the other person. And that might seem like multitasking, but it really is not. Because this is more like setting my body into the right setting, right? In order to be able to be fully present. This is this, and then also some other things can help, like if you have a lot of to-dos, something like getting things done, or any other system that helps you get things out of your head and onto paper or into a system that you trust, that can help. Those are the main things. And what I feel with every mental or emotional development is that it starts with my body. And that I have devoted a lot of time fixing my body, right? or working on and improving my bodily functions, because I feel that this is the base for also my character development and my emotional development.
Yeah, you just gave me a nice reminder for a few things. First of all, writing things down to get it out of my head so that I can focus on the here and now. And the other thing is, I know that I want to take more care of my body. Self-care is really something what I neglected the last couple of months, maybe years. And my body is actually giving me a lot of signals that I should do that.
For example, I do intermittent fasting. That really helps me to have mental clarity and to have the resources to be present, right? Because you can wish to be present as much as you want. If you don't have the mental capacity at that moment, then it's not going to work. I'll try, it doesn't always work out, to get full 9 hours of sleep. Because I found out that any minute invested in sleep really pays off during the day. Two, three times. I try to walk 1 hour per day. Sometimes it's just half an hour. But I get out every single day in the sunlight. Sometimes it's in the evening. And then I just go with the carrier. But I get out every single day and I move every single day. And I used to be a little bit puffy and not really fat, but I used to weigh way more than I do now. And
That's why I'm wearing a beard, that you don't see it. No, that's not the reason, but it helps too to hide some certain areas.
Yeah, and I have added slowly and slowly, I've added more physical activity into my day. You know, I started gardening, then I started walking every single day, then I started body art and Pilates, then I started tennis. And so I just added, bit by bit, I added more physical activity to my week, and that has really paid off.
Yeah, that I just realized again and again, that's also a reason why I love to do podcasts. I'm learning by myself, not only that I want to give benefit to my listeners, to my audience, I'm evolving by myself with each and every interview, with each person who is talking to me. And in this case, you're teaching me. It's not that I don't know what you're talking about, but it's a gentle reminder, do something. And you give me a lot of ideas now. That's really great, and I thank you for that.
Yeah, I think if you want to make a big change in your life, you need energy for doing this, and you need to train your body to generate a lot of energy, and that is very different from taking in energy just by eating. Because the energy you ingest is not the energy you get, right? You can easy, junk food is the perfect example that has many calories, but you don't get a lot of energy from it, like life force type energy, right? And so I think all the things I do is to just help my body to get into that mode where it generates a lot of energy, you know, may it be... sleeping, because that is so important to repair your whole system. May it be intermittent fasting, because that really helps your body to be able to make its own energy, right? To burn your fat and use fat as a second source of energy next to sugars. Or may it be moving your body. So in order to make that physical energy available to you. And I think a lot of people, they have big plans, but first they need to make sure that the body functions in a way that they have that energy to make that change, because otherwise it will just be frustrating if you're just eating burgers and drinking Coke. You can try to be present and in meditation, but it will probably not work very well.
I'm not really eating a lot of fast food, but I can relate quite well to what you just said. I was not so conscious in what I was putting into my body. And if I think about it, it's mainly cooked food and not so much raw and lively food. I feel it. As you said, the energy is missing. And if there's not enough energy, how do I want to accomplish something? Or how do I want to be focused on a task? It's possible, but it's much harder than if you have the power and the energy to focus on something. I was just thinking, you were saying something, it's not only the food. I think you were meant, what do you mean by that actually?
It's also the air you're breathing. And same with food. The air you're breathing and how much energy you can take of that air is a different question. So you need to train your body to fully utilize your lungs, right? It is also the environment you're seeing. Is it where are you sitting? And that is one of the rare
that
things
is a,
where you have a lot of control. Not totally.
That is a great point. Let me change my position.
Yeah.
Because I just realized how I was squeezed there in there, how I was sitting. Let me straighten a little bit up.
Yeah. So your environment.
Oh, this is a nice view with the sunlight in there. It just happened like that. I leave it.
Yeah. I like to have a very clean desk where there's no clutter. It helps me to focus. So what do you see all around me in my environment? And also the thoughts that come. So the thoughts I tell myself or how other people talk to me.
Yeah.
For example, certain people that are negative, well, I don't want them in my life, right? And other people... I give them some rules to follow, right? For example, one relatively new rule with my wife is that our first interaction every day is positive, and then 1 hour there is no criticism or planning of problems or whatever. The first hour needs to be just a positive interaction, whatever it might be, and any problem can wait to be solved after this. Right? So in order to get into the habit of digesting positive thoughts.
Yeah, that is a very, very interesting thing what you just told me. Yeah. I think it's important to start
to
a day like that.
Positive, right? But it's not possible. Huh? But it is good to train yourself, I think. And so in this way, for me, the start of the day is important to set a good mood for the day. And, well, ask me again in a year. My plan is to prolong this, right?
Yeah.
And then in the end, set a specific time for criticism and dealing with problems and everything, and have everything else just be positive interaction.
Yeah. I mean, I was just thinking about something. I was thinking about my mentor, Brandy Ridgway, and I interviewed him a couple of weeks ago. And he brought me this idea about what if there is no negative and positive or good and bad. All these dualities, what we think or believe that it exists. And what if it's just a language pattern or whatever you might call it. And yeah, the best way to explain it, I would say, what if it's not positive or negative, what if it just is?
That sounds like a great idea.
I know what that's sometimes not so easy to it's also about not judging something or making any assumption or something like that. And I know it's not always possible. We fall sometimes in these patterns to judge things or to make assumptions. What will happen if I do this or that? But it might predict already the outcome too. If we make assumptions or if we judge something or someone.
Yes, it might. But I think this kind of thinking, it needs a lot of training and it might
definitely
not be attainable for a lot of people in the short. So what do you do until then, right? So if you fall in the water, even if you cannot swim perfectly, it's better to do something to keep your head over the water. Over time, maybe you learn how to make perfect strokes, right? But you don't want to drown. So I think it's also important to not look for a perfect solution, but to see what is working for me now. And definitely I can feel in my body whether I have a positive interaction or a nurturing interaction or something that interaction that makes me smile, something that makes me happy, or something where even if it's true and even if it's at the end it's good, because I look at my own shadow or I look at a part of me that's not so cool and I probably don't like to look at, you know? It's great for somebody to talk about it, but not always.
Yeah. No, I definitely agree with you. That's actually also why I called my podcast The Smiling Conscious Traveler, especially the smiling, because it reminds me every morning when I make my video in the morning, I better put a smile on my face, because otherwise the people won't believe me that I'm the smiling conscious traveler. And of course, there's a deeper meaning behind that. It's for myself, actually, the smiling too. That, yeah, even when I let the breath in there, the breath feels more welcome when there's a smile on my face. And I definitely get that, what you mean by positivity, that you have, a lot of people call it high vibrations, high vibrating energy in your body. And it's not only that I have to feel happy first to be smiling. It's maybe easier to be smiling first and then to be happy. It seems to be no difference between the two approaches, but I think it's really important in which way, in which order you do it. And the outside, the smile helps first to create the inner state. That's my perception, my view on this, what you just said.
I had one subject at university that was really the most important one, and it was called dynamic systems. And in this, I learned that pretty much everything I learned before doesn't make any sense. So I was kind of angry also. But I was also given a new reality in which I understood that what we see as outcome and what we see as start, that doesn't really exist. It's just terms, you know, and that the causal, like A causes B, well, this is just something we make up in our minds. Actually, everything is interconnected with an indefinite amount of connections and thereby indirect effects. And the best thing, for example, if you look at the forest and there are owls in the forest and mice, you know, the owls, they eat the mice, then there are less mice, then there are not so many owls, and then there are not so many owls, so the mice population is growing again, right? And then, you know, what is contributing to what, you know? Is it the owl or is it the mice, you know? What is A, what is B? Well, it isn't. It is locked in an ever-changing, mutually influencing system. And I believe that the whole world works like this, and also we as individuals work like this. So the beautiful thing about this is that often if you ask yourself, oh, I need to do this in order to reach this, also it often, very often works the other way around.
Okay, yeah.
And you can start was the end.
I like the way how you put everything in metaphors, to that it's much easier to picture it, and I think that's how our brains really work. We think more in pictures than in words. And this beautiful picture now with the owls and the mice, it really worked well for me to understand that it's actually not really so important as I said before. If I smile first, or if I'm happy first, or if I feel good first and then I smile, and or the other way around. It's actually, as you said, a system which it works together, and it's not really important how it happened this way or that way.
Mm-hmm. And it isn't. It's not so important if you first, you know, see that you drink enough water, like 2-3 liter water per day, or that if you walk every day, or that you get 8 hours of sleep every day. You know, the one thing. Just focus on the one thing that will get you results quickly, and then build on the momentum, because everything is interconnected. Drinking more water, you will sleep better, you know? Drinking more water, you will feel more motivated to go for a walk, right? Or going for a walk will help you to sleep better, right? Or sleeping more or sleeping better will help you to be more present and to make better lifestyle decisions, like going for a walk or drinking some more water.
Wow. It's so simple and yet so profound, what you just said.
Yeah, because usually if you're like, I'm here now. Oh shit, I am stuck in this dark place, you know, and I want to go there. Oh, it's light, and well, I have an athletic body. I have a great relationship. I am rich. I'm happy. I have a great character and something, and it almost unattainable, right? And then knowing that, just focus on one thing, just focus on one little thing, and it will spread through your whole system and help you reach that goal. That helps for me a lot.
Yeah, that is, wow.
So I personally started with fixing sleep, just to give you an idea.
Yeah.
And also, I think, for example, sleep, most people, like what I said, use that thing where you have the most control and where it's easy to get results. For example, most people use the alarm clock in the morning. But it's so much easier to use it at nighttime. Because if you just set a bedtime alarm, well, you go to sleep, you have a long sleep, and you kind of wake up naturally. Well, you might still have to set an alarm clock in the morning if you need to be somewhere at a certain point, right? But it's so much easier to find out how many hours do I need sleep to be rested, and then make sure you go to bed at that time.
Yeah.
Same like if you don't want to eat junk food, well, if you have all that chocolate and sweet and stuff at home, that is very hard. So the best time is to go to change the habit is when you go shopping, right? It's much easier there. In this one moment, you can have a positive influence on your full next week, because what you shop, what you don't have at home, you can't eat. So most people, I think they make change very hard on themselves, and this is part of my job to help them to identify critical situations where it is easy to influence and to have it spread out through your whole system, and then see what resources you need. For example, it's not a good idea to go shopping hungry. Right?
That's true.
If you go shopping after you have rested and had breakfast, for example, then, wow, you make better decisions when shopping. And then this again can have influence on your full week.
Yeah, I just see how you dropped the golden nuggets. It's really clicking, and Yeah, as I said, it's simple advice, but it's really profound what you're telling. And especially this, also this conscious choices. Yeah, that you, as you said, you rest first, you don't go hungry to the shop, and then you make conscious decisions. That you don't make it out of your, oh, I feel hungry now, I need something to eat now, and then you just take everything into the shopping cart what is available.
Yeah. I have to say, though, that I am usually against conscious decisions, right?
Okay.
Because, well, no, I have to rephrase that. I am against making conscious decisions again and again.
I get
I
what
am
you mean.
For making conscious decisions, then building behavior that is automatic and unconscious. Why? Because remember when you first learned how to drive the car, right?
Okay, I get
there were so many things and you had to make so many decisions. It seemed like, well, you will never learn how to drive the car and change the gear and steer and look over your shoulder and all at the same time in the same sequence. But then it became automatic.
Yeah.
And now you can do it and talk with somebody else at the same time. And I think
It takes a lot of energy when you constantly make conscious decisions.
Yes, yes. And very sadly, like the only tool most people know for change is motivation and discipline. But motivation and discipline or self-discipline very, very heavily needs resources. And when I say resources, that's mostly glucose, right? So, but you can say your system needs to have resources, mental, emotional, and physical resources in order to make good decisions, in order to be conscious, right? So any decision we can avoid, that's very good. Very good to make a decision once and then turn it into an automatic behavior. For example, snoozing, right? Snoozing is, for some people it works, for me it doesn't work. So what do I do? Well, my alarm clock is on top of like I need to climb up in order to mute my alarm clock.
Yeah.
And then once I've gone there, well, I'm not going to go back to bed. But if it is my phone ringing and it's like, and it already says like mute, snooze, and that is the biggest button, right?
Yeah.
And so it's easy to hit and go back to sleep. Well, then obviously this is what I do. So in this way, trained myself, made a decision once. I want to stop snoozing. I put my environment and my whole system in a way so that not snoozing is the easier road to go behavioral wise. And then over time, your whole system trains to basically right be awake after the alarm clock rings. If you need an alarm clock, that's the whole discussion by itself. But as I drive the kids to the kindergarten every morning, it's good to have an alarm clock.
Yeah, honestly, I try to, I don't use it very often, alarm clock, but at the moment I'm still working in a full-time job and luckily I have flexible work hours, so I just get up when I wake up. And that's somewhere between, 6 and 7 o'clock in the morning, but not a fixed time. And as you said, this hint was quite good that if you to remind myself in the evening to go to the certain time to sleep, then instead of having an alarm clock in the morning, because actually with me it's not really 8 hours; it's maximum 7 hours that I sleep lately. And Yeah, it might have to do with all the other habits what don't fit so well in my life. I don't really sleep well sometimes, and I think it's not only the nutrition, it's also the stress and a lot of things coming together.
Yeah, fixing sleep for me was a game changer. I used to be pretty grumpy. Now I'm grumpy sometimes still, but so much less mood swings.
There's one other thing what might be important is also, I think this fits together with what I just said, organizing my life. If I'm organized and if I have a certain routine also, then the sleeping patterns develop by itself somehow.
Yeah. I think it also depends on your character. For example, my wife, she gets nervous if there's too much routine, you know. She needs the freedom of every day to be different. Yeah. For me, it's perfect for every day to be the same, to go to bed at the same time, wake up at the same time. I can even eat the same meals, you know, for many weeks. I can have the same breakfast, and then maybe I change at one point, but that's just fine for me. I like it.
Yeah, I don't know. I like spontaneous life, but I guess, as I said, I'm working full time. It's not really, it's sometimes not really possible to have spontaneous decisions if I want to keep this job, what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And actually, this is part of my journey at the moment, that I am trying to figure out how I make this transition from the job to a more, free life too, but more a business life, I would say. And with business comes also more responsibility, but also more freedom too. But the freedom is, I experienced it several times in the past already, because I had already some entrepreneurial endeavors. And with more freedom comes also, it's sometimes a little bit challenging too, because you have the choice not to get up in the morning. You have the choice not to do something productive during the day. And at the end of the day, it might be okay if you choose to do nothing on this day, but sometimes, or the most of the time, you want to do something and you want to move forward, and then you feel a little bit frustrated. So it's not for everyone, this style of living, because a lot of people say, I want to be self-employed, I want to be a business person. I just realized that you might be living this way of life for many, many years already, because you are actually an entrepreneur. So how do you cope with this responsibility or this freedom?
I decided, I had one job when I was at university. I was working, I was packing and sending, picking and packing medical supplies, a very big warehouse in the Netherlands. And it has its advantages, but I want to spend my life in a way that reflects more of what's inside me. I want to give, and I know ultimately I'm happy if I can build that. For me, this is also sometimes a struggle, and it's not always working well. Sometimes it's very beneficial, sometimes it's not. And I think the current corona thing has shown many people that probably their job is not as secure as they thought. And we will see in the next 2 years what will happen. I think a lot will change in the business world. I think there will be a lot more self-employed people, a lot more people that really need to figure out how they can make this lifestyle work. But it is, I read The 4-Hour Workweek by Timothy Ferris when I was at university, and I thought, I want to do that. And I thought, well, cool, I just set up my business and then forever I will live at the beach. And this
That's
is not what
most
happened.
Of the people imagine when they think of self-employed.
Yes, this is not at all what happened. But I have grown in this and I have become much better. I think one of the important things is to look at your business model and to really figure out your business model, especially if you're a solopreneur. And there's a great book. I don't know if it's translated in English. It's called Solopreneur. And that is a great starting point to learn more about important decisions you can make for yourself to become entrepreneur, and a lot of other great books, but that's a really good starting point.
I just had one question for myself in my mind. I'm calling my podcast a Smiling Conscious Traveler, though I didn't really talk much about traveling the last 10 episodes. But somebody told me actually, if you talk a lot about life and psychology and all this kind of stuff, it's also somehow a journey. You're traveling on a road, on a mental road. And yet I still, you just mentioned the beaches, and then I remembered your journey to India. I don't know if there are many beaches, but I was thinking about traveling again when you mentioned the beaches. And how do you think, nobody knows how it will develop, but how do you think it will go on for your personal life? I guess you want to travel for sure in the future again. And how, let me say it this way. I want to be really the conscious traveler. I want to make my podcasts on the road. And I'm just trying to figure out how am I going to do this in these crazy times. So how do you think it will work out for your life?
I don't know. And also my daughter is going to school on Friday week. So there will also be more... Like we're not as free as we were before with traveling. But I'm sure we will find a good way. And there are families that, travel the world and teach their children by themselves. And they are happy in doing it.
I was just thinking about a family I know. They call themselves the Unstoppable Family, and they're doing that, I think, almost 10 years now. And every half a year, they change the country. Every 6 months, they go to a different country, and they have a daughter. She is now, I think, 12 or 13 years old. She traveled most of the time of her life, actually. And she, a lot of people say, I can't do this to my kids. The children most of the time don't have a problem with that. Yeah, it might be tricky sometimes when they find friends, and I think that is the most tricky part, when kids find friends and they have to say goodbye to their friends and you move on to another place. But the rest, I think, is quite exciting for the kids.
I think, I just have to think about a great quote. I think it's by Mark Twain, and he said, I have experienced many miseries in my life, most of which never happened. Right? So I think a lot of people, they let themselves stop even in their thinking because of fears or because of ideas how things should be or what problems could arise. And then it's usually those people who are not aware of the problems that could arise and they just do it that create a new reality also for other people to follow.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. First of all, about the fear before, because that's actually something I think what is stopping me at the moment, not to move out of this job. First of all the time everybody tells me, yeah, these are uncertain times, don't give up your job. But most of the time I'm telling myself actually not to give up the job because of this fear of the unknown. And also what you said about there's not so much freedom anymore when you were talking about your kids because the kids going to school. But what if this is just a belief that, as you said, there is always a possibility. You can homeschool your kids. You can find other ways how to deal with the new situation if you are traveling.
Yes. And
it's just a decision for yourself and for your kids.
Yeah,
to make a clear decision.
I want
to
do, you know, it's not stopping me.
And even this corona thing.
At any moment, I can leave Germany. I can take my kids. I can leave Germany, and then I am fully free.
Yeah.
Still, at the same time, like you said, I think maybe it is nice for kids to have a more stable home. You know. To get friends and to go to school. I don't know. I will find out. But I try to test everything myself.
Yeah, that is great.
I don't believe in things that I have not tested myself.
Mm.
Well, obviously I do believe in some things that I have not tested myself. But whenever possible, I try to really try it out and see what happens. Because how something worked out for somebody else doesn't necessarily mean it will work out the same way for me.
Yeah. Actually, I just remembered my wife told me something because we have quite a big age difference. We're 13 years apart. And she's always telling me, don't tell me already from your experience all the time to stop me from doing something. Let me experience it by myself. And even if I make the same, quote, mistake like you did, let me experience it by myself. And then I realized, yeah, she's right. Why should I tell her what might happen, what might not even happen, actually? It's her experience. And yeah, it's maybe, as I said, the age difference too, and that I am a little bit older than her, and that I feel like I have to tell her, I have to warn her, and it happened to me like that, and you shouldn't do that this way. And that fits perfectly together what you just said, that to test it by yourself and not believe what other people are telling you. Yes, I listen what other people are telling me. I hear it. But at the end, I still make the decision by myself. And yeah, I just realize I'm going more and more into this conversational style, what people suggested, because there were some people suggested they don't want that only interview, question, answer. A lot of people told me as a feedback they would like to have more conversations. Like one person is talking, telling a story, then the other person is talking. Why not?
It's nice. It feels very natural.
Yeah, that is actually the point. It feels natural. Why do I always have to ask questions? You can ask me a question too. Yes, it's my podcast, but still, why can't we have a conversation?
Yeah. Okay, let me ask you a question. What is the best question that I can ask you now that will give you like a aha moment?
Best question. Yeah, I just, the first word what came to my mind was fear. It was about the fear what I just mentioned. Mm-hmm. Just okay. Trying to formulate the question, maybe something why, or okay, what so I'm afraid of, actually.
What would you do if you wouldn't be afraid? How would you be a different person if you wouldn't be afraid?
The first thing what came to my mind is just walk out of the door and do it. And do it means, yeah, that what I was just saying before, I want to travel. And how was the second part? How would I feel different? Or,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I would feel more free.
Okay, and where would you feel that freedom in your body?
I just go by intuition now. It was just my stomach what was feeling like releasing this tension. Okay. What I just felt in my stomach. I even had to change my posture because I just realized that I was sitting too much in front and feeling this weight on my stomach.
Well, maybe that feeling and focusing on that feeling in breathing exercise can help you to just do it.
That is the next step, the breathing. Yeah, that was what I just stopped for a second.
Yeah. Yeah, because I think breathing, it is a great catalyst. If you combine breathing and bodily sensations, that is, for me, it's the best way to work on emotions.
Yeah. That ties also in this together what I did the last 6 years with my mentor, that the breathing, the abdominal breathing, really like a baby's breathing, and to feel the emotions and also to release them, really to let myself feel the emotions.
Sounds like you have a great technique.
Yeah.
Are you doing it on a daily basis?
On a daily basis, not, but I'm doing it from time to time, let's say this way.
Okay.
Yeah. I want to do it more regularly. And it's, thank you for this reminder.
Yeah. This is because this is part of what I teach people, because most people know what they should do. And if they're really honest, they can easily name 10 things they shouldn't do so often and 10 things they should do. And then often it's not about what to do, but how to do it and how to make it part of your everyday life.
Yeah, I think my kids are playing with the phone. That's why I'm looking down all the time. I will switch it off now. Yeah. So, yeah, that's, thank you for this reminder. And it's really, I will focus. I will really take this more seriously, what you said, to focus on the simple things and just to focus on one thing at this time. Not, and take small steps. Like, yeah, it's even in our language to take the baby steps.
Mm-hmm.
Like babies are showing us perfectly how it works. One step at a time.
Yeah. And work, if you feel resistance, work with it and find a way that either works through the resistance, use the resistance to gain knowledge and let it go, or work with the resistance. And for example, like there's a technique I call 1+, which means just 1 minute more every day. And it's so easy, but if you say it's walking outside, right? You end up with half an hour after 1 month. Well,
yeah,
it's perfect, half an hour. Walking outside has lots and lots of health benefits.
Actually, this I'm doing it every day, especially Monday to Friday when I go to work, because it started actually in May after the lockdown. My boss told me to come back to office, and I didn't really feel like going with the bus because of this mask craziness. And then I said, let me walk to work. It's just 5 kilometers. It's about 1 hour walk. But yeah, people are telling me, why are you walking 2 hours per day? 1 hour in the morning, 1 hour in the evening. I said, because I am enjoying it. And that got really a habit since May. So that's now how many months? 5 months now, almost. And I'm walking almost 50 kilometers every week. So, and I'm not doing it because I'm doing sports. I'm doing it because I'm enjoying it. And somehow it's also beneficial for my body. But most of all, I'm doing it because it's beneficial to my whole state of being. And all this slow pace. Because even if I would go with a bike, it's a different energy. When you go with a bike, yeah, it can be nice and fun too, but you are missing out on so many things when you're going faster. And yeah, this 1 hour when I walk to work, it's like I'm really, it's not always that I'm conscious what is there around me. I'm just taking it in. Yeah, so that part, I mastered it already. With the walking,
yeah, and that is great. And then you can use chaining to connect other things you want to it, right?
Chaining, example, doesn't,
let's say, say you want to drink more water, right?
Okay.
So you take 1 liter, 1 liter bottle of water, put it in your hand, and while you walk, you drink, right? And so your goal is to just finish the bottle by the time you arrive. Right? So
never heard about it.
Well, usually chaining it, the prime example is if you want to floss your teeth, you know, then you brush your teeth anyway. You can train yourself to either floss before or after, pros and cons for it, but you know, to make it together so two actions actually just become one and it becomes automatic. Same way that when you were very young, you learned you need to put down your trousers before you go to toilet, then after toilet, use the toilet paper, then after, put your trousers back, and then wash your hands, right? And you're all separated steps, and it just becomes like, oh, I'm going to the toilet, and you're not even aware of the different steps. This is how chaining works, but you can also make a decision to do it, right? Yeah. And so... Yeah.
Because I was just thinking about what a friend of mine who is also doing podcasts said. He said about the washing hands, feeling the water, being aware of what you're doing. And that is somehow the opposite of what you said before, but it's a choice. I can do it unconsciously, just like I'm doing it like a routine, or I can do it consciously.
Yeah,
and nothing is better or worse. It's just a choice how you want to do it.
Yes, and there's a lot of mindfulness now all around us, and there's a lot of being conscious of everything and making conscious decisions. And
sometimes it can be overwhelming too.
I don't think that is the way. I rather you know. Know that I will make the right decision because I don't make a decision because it's set on autopilot. And then I have all those other mental and emotional resources to create something new.
Yeah, now I get the behavioral things, these habits, these patterns, what you're talking about. Now it all made sense what you said in the last sentence.
For example, if you want to say, okay, I'm not doing my meditative practice, you know, maybe there is a bench while you're walking, you come across a park and there's a bench, you know, and then you make it a habit to just sit down there 2 minutes and just focus on your inner work. And you just, you know, and this way, because you walk by there anyway, you know, you have integrated that in your day. And you know, okay, twice a day, I sit down, just 2 minutes, and I do that. And that accumulates, right? And this is what many people don't understand, you know, just like, I know, one Snickers per day. Well, that accumulates over a year to a lot of calories, a lot of kilograms of extra fat, right? Well, just 2 minutes of meditation every day. Well, that is a lot of minutes per year.
Yeah, but the difference is a little bit with the kilograms. You really see it. You see your physical experience. With the mental experience, it's sometimes not so clear what did actually change. So I think what helps, in my opinion, is sometimes to have something like a journal, maybe a written journal or a video journal or something, that you keep track of what really changed.
Yeah.
And I'm doing that lately, and I really see the change. Especially when I make my vlogs every morning, and I see how way more relaxed I am on the videos since I'm doing that. It's just 6 weeks ago that I started, but it's really amazing.
Yeah, all my coaching clients, they actually make that visible because they have to answer a few questions every morning. Not a lot. but one of the questions is just a slider from low energy to high energy, because it seems that what is your current energy level that incorporates a lot of other measurements that has very high correlation with how happy are you, and other stuff. So I usually use this one question, and then you can plot a graph and see how you're doing.
I see you like the scientific approach. Actually,
well, it works for me because I need to see the graph.
Yeah.
If I don't see the graph,
that is actually what I just said before. It's sometimes quite important to me that I see the difference. That it really makes sense at the end to me that I'm doing it. As I said, with the kilograms, I see it not immediately, but I see something if I get more kilograms. But yeah, with this graph, it's also a visual way. Yeah, and actually, I'm also, as I'm an engineer too, I like also numbers and graphs and something what I can touch somehow.
Yeah, for example, one of my goals is to change my body composition to have less fat and more muscle, and the way. Easy measure is the I measure my waist every day, right? And so my next goal is to go to 80 centimeter waist circumference. So I just measure that every morning, and it is a way to see, am I on track? Which way is it going? I mean, it's sometimes a little bit more, sometimes a little bit less, but you get the pattern.
I think if I do this tomorrow morning, I would get frustrated because I know that the circumference is way more than I wish it to be.
But I mean, that is the nature of the goal, right?
No, but that's how it always starts. In the beginning, it might be frustrating, but if you see the changes in the direction you want to move, then it gets
more motivated. No, I don't think it's frustrating because you are not starting. You have almost finished. Why? Because you have thought about it for a long time. You've tried different things that didn't work. And you have made a decision to commit yourself, and you've found a tool to keep yourself on track, and then you, like, this is almost the last step. Now it is just some time that needs to pass, right? Mm. And the funny thing is, once you start measuring something, you are already changing. Like, for example, if you tell people only to take pictures of their food, they will eat more healthy, you know? You don't tell them to eat healthy. You just tell them to take pictures of their food. And they start to eat healthy because they become more conscious of it, because it breaks the unconscious pattern of eating, right? Mm. And so this is my way. I just made it a habit to measure my waist every morning, and also to know, okay, maybe I skip a meal today, you know? Mm. Or maybe I need to eat more.
Yeah, I just feel like that this was really a free coaching session today. And I just wanted to ask you, what if people want to connect with you and want to get in contact with you? How can they reach you, and what do you actually offer them?
Yeah, well, they can just Google me, Martin Glennard, and then, what do I offer? Well, I offer many things, and it is also in the development. I don't have a very clear-cut way, but I think the two things that are best structured right now is I do dark therapy, so people can come spend some time in the darkness, and that's an amazing experience and a profound transformation. And I work on habits with people. Mm. So I work on raising their energy level and to help the guide them through a good daily routine. And I use habits and something I call dynamic energy coaching, which, you know, incorporates a lot of the dynamic systems approach, but matched to the individual and its environment.
Okay, great. Yeah, thank you so much for your time today.
And yes, you're welcome.
It was really a pleasure to have a conversation with you.
Yes.
So,
likewise,
have a great evening, because here in Austria and in Germany it's evening already. And yeah, I definitely will connect with you again, and let's have conversations again.
Yeah, thank you for having me, and all the best for your journey inwards and outwards, wherever it may lead you.
Thank you so much. Okay.